Today on Rambling About Cars, will I AMG or will I won't? Honda Civic is finally going to debut the Type R version in June. A 682 horsepower Escalade, a crazy powerful Land Rover, Range Rover Sport, Scout is coming back, International, all kinds of cool news to talk about. Plus, we have some comments that we need to catch up on. So without further ado, it is podcast time. I am Christopher Smith. Welcome, everybody, especially Chris Bruce. How you doing, man?
I'm doing really well. Hey, I just real quick, before we get into the meat of the show, I want to do a quick kind of businessy type thing. And that is something you and I have kind of been banding about for the last 2 weeks or so. Yeah, and kind of like before that, this has come up before. You and I would like to watch a movie and comment on it, kind of do, if anyone's watched Mystery Science Theater 3000 or Riff Tracks or anything like that, we would like to do something like that with an automotive-based movie. It turns out, so Seth Meersma, who has been our guest in the past, he has never seen any of the Fast and the Furious movies. I have only seen two of the Fast and the Furious
movies. Yeah. Nah, I'm the oldest guy here. How is it that I've... Well, maybe that's why I've seen them all. But no, that doesn't... That explains why I saw like the original and maybe like, you know, Tokyo Drift and those, but doesn't explain why I watched the Fiero fly to space.
But so we're thinking that we would do a watch along series. It would be completely separate from Rambling About Cars. In my mind, it would be called Rambling About Car Movies or something like
that.
And, you know, it'd probably be Friday or a Saturday evening. And what we would do is we would set up a thing. It would probably be through Motor One's Twitch account or maybe through Motor One's YouTube Live account. You know, we would start maybe half an hour beforehand, get people in, say, hey, everyone, here's the link. Or if it's on Amazon Prime or something like that, go to this place. We're all going to press play at the same time. And then you are going to watch Seth and I, too many S's, all at the same time. And we're going to react to it.
It could be fun. And obviously it's, I mean, we're just kind of spitballing this idea here, but with people that haven't seen these movies yet, I would love to see some of your reactions because I've seen everyone in the series so far.
Well, here's the thing. So if anyone out there has heard of the producer Roger Corman, he was prolific throughout the 50s, 60s, mm-hmm. 70s, I think even in the 80s. But he did a whole lot of low budget films. And it just so happened he did a film called The Fast and the Furious. It's either from 54 or 55. I'm 99.9% sure it's in the public domain because not only can you find it on YouTube, you can find it on archive.org and just watch it. And so, as with any of these things, Smith and I have to have a proof of concept that we can go to our bosses and say, hey, this is our idea. This is what it would look like. This, you know, people would follow us. So I'm just saying, if you are a listener of this show, we're still early on here. If you think that you would join us and watch something like that, ping us either on this post that's going to be on MotorOne.com, send an email to podcast@MotorOne.com, comment on the YouTube page. Just we're feeling the waters here. Like if we get no reaction and it's dead, like, okay, maybe we won't do it. But if we get some folks that want to watch along to a starting off a weird old film, and then maybe if we can convince people the Fast and the Furious series, I'm game. It would probably, in my mind, it would be like a monthly thing. So first weekend of the month, last weekend of the month, whatever it worked out, we would just do one at a time and go through. And then maybe we would watch other car movies. I don't know if anyone's ever seen it. It's not a car movie. It's a motorcycle movie that's trying to rip off Fast and the Furious. But Torque is the dumbest movie ever. And I would love to watch it with people.
I haven't seen it simply based on the title because it's like it's a motorcycle movie called Torque. What motor vehicles generally don't have any torque whatsoever? Motorcycles.
It's terrible, but terrible in the best way possible. And for any of you people who like Parks and Rec, Adam Scott is in it as maybe the villain, maybe the hero. Like, Adam Scott, it's a bad good movie. So
it could be, saying, a good one for the list. So yeah, yes. let us know if you want to see this. Let us know if you want to join us on this adventure. I think it could be a lot of fun. The stream and comment, it's what all the kids are doing these days. So
yes,
we've gotta stick with the kids, especially since I just had a birthday. I really need to stick with the kids. I'm getting to the point now where
borderline there, Smith.
Well, I'm starting to understand when James May, and I can't remember what program it was in, when he was like, you know, I never imagined myself as old. I'm not old really by that definition yet, but I'm getting there. So we've got to stick with what the kids are doing. So let us know if you want to join us on that. And you know what, Bruce, before we jump into the news, this is something that we don't usually do, but perhaps the listeners are just want to know a little bit about what's going on in our lives. Like I just had a birthday. I mean, let's just catch up for a few minutes. I mean, what have you been up to, man? I mean, we write automotive news every day. We have our Teams account where we're chatting, but we don't really get much of a chance to catch up. So I mean, just what's been going on in your life here the last month or year or decade or so?
Jesus, man. You actually, I don't think, know about this because you're not in. So Ride Apart is in our motorsport.com Motor One universe. Ride Apart is our motorcycle site. They do fantastic work. I highly recommend checking out rideapart.com.
Definitely.
But Smith, you are not part of their chat, so I don't think you know about this, but I am a motorcycle owner now.
Oh, no, I'm not. I'm not part of the chat. What do you have?
I now own a Honda Navi, which is... It's not quite a scooter and it's not quite a motorcycle. So there's no, it has a CVT, like a twist and go scooter, but it's not step through. So you still, it has a saddle that you have to kind of step over and put yourself into.
What's the engine on that?
It is a 110cc single cylinder carbureted engine making, I believe if you look at Honda, they say it's 7.8 horsepower. We're going to call it 8 horsepower just to be generous. I got it in March, however, because of the weather here in northwestern Ohio, I got to write it the day after I picked it up.
I think you have told me about this now. Okay. I just didn't remember it, but no, I mean, tell me more about it because
starting to warm up here, and so I rode it again on Sunday for the second time, and it's been a cool thing. My dad has been into motorcycles kind of forever. He raced motocross when he was in kind of his teens, and he has just a plethora of, he likes kind of small displacement bikes. So we've got a Vespa GS150. He's got an Aprilia SR50. He's got a Honda Cub. He just got his Navi last week. And he's got a Vespa Primavera 150 as well. So lots of scooters for him. And so, yeah, I just kind of took after the family and I've got one now, and it's the same color as my Mini, or near as makes no difference. And it sits right in front of it in the garage because the Mini is small. Thankfully it's as to its name, and it's an R50. So it's actually small. And so the Navi sits right in front of it. So
that's very cool. Can you believe I'm 30 miles from like Sturgis, South Dakota, the motorcycle mecca of
dude, if I showed up at Sturgis, my Navi, I would get beat up.
You're not wrong. I mean, it's like Harley Central. I've been tempted by a bike, but I wouldn't want a Harley. I'd want like an older Honda or a Suzuki. Yeah. And you see some of those out here, but that's very, very cool, man. Very cool.
But what about you? What have been your combustion engine adventures recently?
I mean, I finally got around to replacing the distributor on the Mustang.
Like 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, thereabouts. I mean, the car is not a daily driver, so it's not going out very much. I had it to the point where, as long as I kept the battery supercharged up, it would start up. But I mean, it was cutting out every now and again. All the symptoms were pointing to just a bad distributor, not just replacing the cap and rotor. So I finally replaced that. And after driving it now for a couple of weeks, yes, that was the problem, because it fires right up. It's running good. I finally had some warm weather this past weekend to go out for a little drive. And I went to a section of Dakota Badlands that you don't really get to see from the national park. It's not really necessarily just a local thing, but you know, you go out on some of the back roads, and it's only the second time I've been to that section of the state. I mean, it's really nice drive. So it's nice to be able to get back out and enjoy the convertible a little bit, enjoy the noise a little bit. That's pretty much the extent. I'm planning to make a little bit of a move back towards Michigan later this year. So a lot of my resources are focused in that direction, which means in about a month or so, I'm going to be on an extended vacation. I don't know if I'll do the podcast from Michigan or this is literally news to me. This is literally news. Yeah. Well, this is coming later in June, where I've got to take a trip to just kind of get some things set up. So don't know if I'll podcast. I'm going to try to podcast while I'm there.
You better try, because otherwise,
just so people can get an idea of the new Smith Lair. Because I mean, I'll be building a big office, you know, in the new house. So,
well, not only that, but we're going to have to line up some guest hosts, because
it's just one day to the show
if I just do it alone. It's just going to be me and the corgi. Like, hey, Cooper, what do you think of that?
I'm going to try to do the podcast from there. And if it all works out, hopefully it'll be a really entertaining show, because this is going to be a really cool location to podcast from. So I'll just leave the teaser at that. But should we talk about some news here? We've kind of rambled. Yeah. We're already kind of off the rails a little bit. Nothing wrong with that. Really. We don't have any guests this week. So,
yep. Real quick. Speaking of which, sorry for anyone who listened last week. I said we were going to have a guest. That's totally my fault. I looked at the calendar wrong. Our guest is coming next week. Then we have another guest the following week. So we have guests for the rest of May. I just got the 2 weeks transposed. I'm sorry, folks. It's just Smith and I today, but you'll have a guest next week.
I'm kind of wishing we had somebody else to distract us from this first news story that we're going to talk about. This came out a little while ago. You know, rapper Will.i.am. He's a car guy, and I have mad respect for that. And he's done some very interesting projects in the past. He's got a new one that's called the Will.i.amg, and there's no other way to say it. It's like a G63 had a baby with a GT four door, and well, it looks interesting. For those not following us on YouTube, you'll want to go to Motor One Podcast on YouTube, like, follow, subscribe, all of that good stuff, so you can see what we're talking about. For those listening, imagine like you're sleeping and you wake up, but you're still in that kind of like sleep paralysis mode, where you're awake enough to realize, okay, I'm awake, but your body isn't moving yet, and there's something scary over your head. That's kind of what this is. It's literally the front of a G63 with the body of a GT four door, only,
but it's
a two door.
Yeah.
They took two of the doors off. So yeah.
So Smith, can I tell you something embarrassing?
Oh God, you like it, don't you?
A little bit.
I mean, it's not terrible. I guess the more you look at it, the more it's like, oh, okay. But
also, I have to say, I'm a little bit jealous of having the amount of money that Will.i.am must have had. So we should say this was not built by Mercedes. This was built actually by West Coast Customs, who I assume people have heard of. If not, if you weren't around in the late 90s and you didn't hear West Coast Customs, they were all over the place.
Yeah, very, very prominent custom shop out in California.
Yes.
Very prominent.
They actually built this, but I can't imagine having the amount of money to go to someone and say, hey, take the front end of a G63, graft it on to a AMG four-door, take the rear doors off and turn it into a coupe, and build that for me.
And the irony here,
that's what he did. Like,
yeah. And the irony here is that, okay, how many times have people commented, oh, the AMG GT four door coupe it's four doors, it's not a coupe. Well, now it actually, by that definition, now it actually is. And it looks pretty good from the nose back, but you have this combination of the very chunky G63 boxy styling on the front with the swooping curves at the back. And I mean, the build itself looks very well done.
Very well. You almost can't tell that it's aftermarket. Like the Bear logo at the front, which apparently is a Will.i.am thing. He says it's Bear Witness, B-E-A-R, not, you know. But so that kind of tells you that there's something going on here. But if it had just a Mercedes logo on it, you could think it was an interesting concept. Like you could know there's never going to be a production car that looks like this, but you could believe with these proportions that it was a concept.
Well, if you didn't, if you didn't know the G63 existed and the AMG GT four door existed, it would make sense. Folks that know of these vehicles, I mean, as soon as you see it, it's just going to be like, I mean, for me, it's polarizing. I'm not going to sit here and be a jerk about it because it does look like a very, very well done build. It's got the cool, those weird like butterfly doors that open up on it. That's a pretty cool feature. The fabrication that's got into it, like I said, lot of quality looking work here. It's just the styling just doesn't quite mesh with me. And hey, that's all right. It doesn't have to be everything to everybody.
Yeah, and that's subjective. But what I think objectively you can say is that West Coast Customs did a hell of a good job here. Like, you really, and if you're watching on YouTube right now, you're looking at the profile shot. Maybe up close, like, you know, maybe from inches away, you could tell that this thing was kind of hacked together. I don't know. But in these photographs, it looks good.
Yeah,
it looks real. Like, so bravo.
You know, with the long hood and kind of the short deck at the back, since it's a four door that's been shrunk down to two, I get a real SLR McLaren vibe from the side. Don't you?
Yeah. And it has these like pseudo T tops. Like, I don't think you can remove these panels, but it still has the spine in the middle of it that kind of gives it that little T top appearance. Like, they did a good job for, you know, whether you like it or not, like the construction that went into this, I applaud them.
Respect the build, but just not for me.
Sure.
And that's, totally. And that's fine. And that's fine. You want to talk about something that's probably going to be for all of us?
Which one?
Are we talking Civic? Which one? Yeah, let's jump to the Civic news. So,
okay,
we've heard just recently, okay, the Honda Civic Type R, we've seen it camouflaged in prototype form for the last 100 years at least. It's like it's like, okay, you had the 1886 motor wagon, and then the Civic Type R was promised, and it's been 100+ years. I might be exaggerating there a little bit, but it feels
about car news every day.
We finally know it's going to be revealed in June, and it's going to be revealed before. Am I correct on this, Bruce? They're going to reveal this before their event in Indiana at Mid Ohio.
Yep,
but not at Mid Ohio. But here's the thing. They're going to fully reveal it, like take the camo off. Here's the car before Mid Ohio. But as I understand, there's still going to be the camouflaged prototype at Mid Ohio. That's sure
what they're saying right now. And we're in May. I wonder. So it's worth pointing out that the Mid Ohio race is July 1st through 3rd. Mm-hmm. I wonder by the time this debuts in June, somewhere in Europe, we don't know exactly where yet. They're just saying at an event in Europe. I wonder whether Honda will change that. I don't know, but it doesn't make a lot of sense to show it uncamouflaged in Europe and then however many weeks later show it in Ohio with camouflage on it. Like, I wonder if that's going to change.
I mean, unless it's going to be one of those cases where, okay, the Euro spec car is a little different than the US spec car, which I don't think that's going to be the case.
Well, maybe it's a little like it'll be a slight, it'll be a inlet here that's maybe a little bit larger in one region or something. It's not going to be much, but
right. I mean, this is fairly recent news as we're recording this today. So
yeah,
there's certainly plenty of time between now and when it's going to debut for things to change. This is just what we're hearing right now. But the big news is finally we're going to get a full reveal. Yes. And I'm excited for it. We don't know for sure yet what's going to be under the hood. It's believed to be just a version of the 2-liter turbo. That's going to be a little bit more than the current car, but not like the wild. I mean, I know there have been some rumors out there that, it'll be a hybrid with 400 horse we don't think that's going to be the case at all.
No, we're not getting any sign of that. So the current Civic Type R makes 306 horsepower in the United States. It makes 316 horsepower, an extra 10 in Europe. And what we're hearing is that it's going to be a tuned version of that. So it's going to make a little bit more. So I hate to speculate. The number that comes to my head is 320. Like that, you know. A little bit more power, not a lot more power. We know it's only going to come with a manual gearbox. Honda has confirmed that. So yeah, it's going to be a little bit more than the current Civic Type R. But the other thing is that from everything Honda has been saying, this is going to be the final Civic Type R with a combustion engine. So if you are married to that, if you love the idea of a combustion engine,
this is it.
You got to go this way because it's not going to happen again.
Yep, this is it. And to further support, just the slight bump in power, Honda recently released information on turning laps. I think Suzuka, right, Bruce?
Yep.
Where they edged out the current Civic Type R by
Type R limited edition by like a second.
But by like a second. So I mean, it's quicker, but. If you're talking about something with 400 horsepower, I would expect to see something bigger than a second difference. So,
right.
I think that kind of supports what we've been hearing on the more mild side. But I mean, that's still a healthy.
It's something, but so
a healthy figure.
To make it clear, the Civic Type R limited edition, it has a bunch of things to make the weight lighter. And presumably they were running the standard version of the new Civic Type R around there. So it makes sense that they up the power by enough to offset the weight difference from the limited edition to get that, you know, it was actually less than it was a fraction of a second. It was a second, like with rounding error, basically. So it's not a lot, but that's what leads us to believe that they up the power by just enough to make it quicker. But it's not going to be, you know, this gargantuan massive change.
Well, you know, interesting that you say massive gargantuan change, because that's, I think, a really, really good segue into the next vehicle we're going to talk about that just debuted today, actually, as we're recording this. It debuted this morning. We're talking about
this big boy?
It's a big boy. We're talking about the 2023 Cadillac Escalade V. This SUV actually made its exterior debut at the beginning of the year. It's got, you know, slightly different front fascia. It's got unique wheels. It's got blacked out trim. But Cadillac didn't tell us anything about what was going on underneath. Now we have full information. And would you like a 682 horsepower Escalade? Because that's what you get. Cadillac says it is the most powerful full-size SUV in the world. 682 horsepower, 653 pound-feet of torque from the supercharged 6.2-liter V8. For the record, it is the same engine that they offer in the CT5V Blackwing. However, for the Escalade, they give it a different supercharger. It's got different lobes, tuned a little bit differently, so the peak power, it's a little bit more. The Blackwing, I think, maxes out at 668 horsepower at 6,500 RPMs. This is 682 at 6,000. So the peak power is hitting a little bit lower. The odd offset to that is The Escalade V has a little bit less torque at 653 pound-feet. I think the Blackwing sedan is 658. I mean, you're not going to notice any difference. And the torque...
Let's talk about the elephant in the room, and that's the price.
What do you mean? It's very reasonably priced at $149,990. That even includes destination charges. But it doesn't.
And we don't know. There's going to be an ESV version of the V, and we don't have pricing for that yet, though. Am I correct?
You can. Cadillac is offering the Escalade V either in the regular version or the stretched out ESV. Regardless of what you get there, Cadillac says it's 0 to 60 in under 4.4 seconds. I don't know if that means 4.3.
But that's quick for a vehicle, it's smoking fast.
Quarter mile, 12.7 seconds at 110. They list the top speed at 124, and I'm sure that's just computer limited. Cadillac didn't explain why it was limited to 124, but I mean, let's be honest, people that are buying an Escalade V, they're not interested in top speed. They're interested in punching the gas, you know, plastering the kids in the groceries to the back seat for a little bit. I want to point out, though, it's stupid fast. It has gobs of power, but this isn't a Blackwing. This is an Escalade V. And I asked Cadillac about this directly. I said, well, you're jumping like gobs of horsepower over a regular Escalade. Why is this not a Blackwing? And the difference is high performance versus ultra high performance. In other words, people,
that's PR language, if I've ever heard
it's PR language, but it does make sense to me because Blackwing, there's a lot of focus on, okay, if you want to take this to the track and really just throw it around a track, it's pretty capable there. Escalade V, no, this isn't going to be something that you're taking to a track. Its main focus is still comfort and luxury. The suspension is tweaked a little bit. It's got the standard magnetic ride control, the air suspension. The rear springs are a little stiffer. There's some different tuning in the dampers. That's pretty much it for the suspension, though. You do get a dedicated V mode that will firm everything up at the push of the button. It's also all customizable. So if you want your steering a little stiffer, with the brakes a little stiffer, with the suspension a little softer, you can customize it however you want. Of course, it has launch control, so you can get that 0 to 60 in 4.4 seconds. But it is still focused on being a comfortable cruiser. So it makes sense to me why this isn't called Blackwing in that respect. Sure. You do get upgraded brakes. There's 6 piston brakes in the front. They didn't mention anything about brake upgrades in the rear. What else we got here? $149,990. It is pretty pricey. Specifically, I think it's equal to a CT5 sedan versus the Escalade Platinum Edition, which I think starts around $110,000. Okay. So it's a big jump. Cadillac does say, and I mean, they were pretty upfront about it. It's the most powerful, most exclusive, most expensive Escalade ever. Mm-hmm. And I mean, they've done a fair amount of research on it. They say that Escalade V buyers are pretty much going to be the same as Escalade buyers. It's going to be a low volume vehicle. I couldn't get them to say what their target was for production, but it'll be available for a few years anyways. Really, when you get inside, it's pretty much a Platinum inside. They don't go crazy with contrast stitching and the performance seats. They just inject it with a lot of power. They tweak the suspension a little bit. They upgrade the brakes, as you should if you're going to have a 3-ton SUV going 0 to 60 in 4.5 seconds. But yeah, the price was obviously a pretty big shock. I don't know how many they're going to sell, but they feel pretty confident that they'll go. We've seen Platinum demand, Escalade Platinum demand is still up there to the point where Cadillac can't really keep up. So there's no shortage of people ready to step up and pay well into 6 figures for an Escalade. So,
well, even a Platinum, if I'm not mistaken, is 110 ish.
Platinum starts just around 110. If you get the shorter model, I think it's just under. The ESV starts at 110, and that's before any options. The Escalade V does, I mean, it does come standard with all kinds of stuff, the magnetic ride control. Super Cruise will be available, but that is listed as an option. We don't know exactly.
Whoa. I didn't realize that. Super Cruise isn't standard if you're already paying $150,000.
They say Super Cruise will be available as an option. Yeah, it's not part of the standard package. So as far as what else will be optional, we still don't know. We'll learn all that once the configurator goes live. It's going to go on sale later this year. And yeah, 682 horsepower Escalade. You know, people have been asking for, in Cadillac's defense, people have been asking for a high performance Escalade for a while now.
Sure, they have been. You're right.
So, I mean, it's certainly been a long time coming. We'll see how it goes. I think it looks pretty cool. I'm happy with the Escalade styling.
It looks fun. It looks like an Escalade with
You can't not like having that much power under your foot. But as I was doing just a little bit of research on price, a Mercedes Maybach GLS is 160. It starts at 160. And this Escalade V starts at 150. So,
and you don't get Super Cruise.
So, you know, the question is, are Cadillac buyers going to consider stepping into Mercedes Maybach territory?
Oh man,
that's a good question.
Huh? Okay. I knew about the price. I knew about the 150K yep. price. I assumed it was essentially every bell and whistle they could pack into this thing, in addition to the more powerful engine. I didn't realize how much was optional.
Well, and to be fair, we still don't know.
Okay.
They mentioned that Super Cruise would be available as an option. They did say that it wasn't part of the standard equipment. That, I mean, we could be talking about, like, you know, maybe an extra grand or two for optional upgrade. It's
not going to be an extra grand or two.
Right. But the point being, if you just want the standard Escalade V, I mean, you're still getting the awesome digital display. You know, the big screen, you're still getting full leather seats all the way back. You're still getting, all your massaging functions. It's got augmented reality, built into it for navigation. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a well-equipped vehicle.
Cool.
So,
I guess, like I said, you and I discussed it. I didn't realize that there were so many options, but hey, if Cadillac thinks that they can offer those options and people will buy them, good on them.
It's going to be a low volume vehicle. All of the really aggressive V vehicles are low volume. So, we'll see. Time will tell. It's going to be around for a couple of years at least. So time will tell. And I'm really curious to see. I think it's a cool vehicle. If Cadillac can move them at 150 and change, hey, go for it.
Yep.
Go for it.
Smith, let's hit this next one kind of quickly, because I want to talk about Scout quite a bit, because it kind of segues into our second segment.
Yes. So
real quick, let's hit the new Land Rover Range Rover Sport. It's a very attractive vehicle.
It is.
Clearly, you can see that they put this thing in the wind tunnel and they took off every bit of anything that could compromise the coefficient of drag, because it kind of looks like it's a crossover that, you know, it just looks very, very sculpted, very, very, yeah, just sculpted is the word I would put with it.
It looks great. You can get the BMW borrowed twin turbo 4.4 liter V8 in the first edition.
Yep.
That 523 horsepower.
If you beat me to it. And you can also get, if you prefer, a plug-in hybrid that makes only 434 horsepower, but you get 619 pound-feet of torque versus the BMW borrowed engine has 553 pound-feet of torque. So you give up some horsepower, you get a boatload of more torque from that plug-in hybrid powertrain.
And it's interesting, the V8 is only offered in the first edition. First edition is only offered for this year. So is this going to be the only time you're going to get that V8? Or will they offer, do you think they'll offer another Range Rover Sport with the V8 further down the road, Bruce?
I guess I don't know. My natural inclination is to say that it would be available later, because by the time you tool up to be able to put a powertrain into a vehicle, you've made such an investment that you're going to keep doing it for more than 1 year. But if you look at what Jaguar and Land Rover have been doing, they have been very serious about their EVs and their plug-in hybrids and their hybrid tech in general. If you look at the other versions of the Range Rover Sport, for example, they use mild hybrid tech other than the plug-in hybrid. So part of me says yes, part of me says no, and I guess I don't know, man. Like, it's an interesting question. If I had to put money down in Vegas right now, I would say it's going to be more than 1 year. But if you ask me, I wouldn't say it was going to be more than 3 years. This is going to be a limited production thing, because I think Jaguar Land Rover is very serious about their hybrid and EV tech. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, since we were talking a little bit on Escalade V pricing, with the Range Rover Sport, they already have their configurator out. So we went ahead and did one of our most expensive posts. Okay, so the Escalade V starts at $149,990. If you click every single option box on the Range Rover Sport, the most expensive model, which is the first edition right now with the V8, anyone out there in listener land, here's your chance to take a quick guess. We'll give you like 5 seconds to guess how much it's going to be. The first edition starts at about $120.
Yes, it's right
thereabouts. So how expensive do you think the 2023 Land Rover Range Rover Sport is with every option box checked? You have 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. It is $141,190. That's a pretty pricey Range Rover Sport, isn't it, Bruce?
But it's still $9,000 less than the Escalade, right? Yeah, $9,000. Yeah, basically.
Yeah, but in Range Rover land, I mean that's pretty pricey too. But hey, it's every option box is checked. It's the first edition. It's the only one with the V8. It's going to be something special. Sure. I did run through since the first edition is just going to be a limited model. I did run through the range topping hybrid. That still tops out at $133,420. So these are luxury SUVs, folks.
Yeah. And correct me if I'm wrong here, because, you know, everyone has an opinion about things. I've always preferred the Range Rover Sport over the regular Range Rover, you know, since it's been available, simply because I feel as though it's the more usable version of the pair. Unless you have like a full family or very, very big dogs or something like that, the Range Rover Sport has always seemed like it does everything the regular Range Rover does, but at a slightly smaller size, maybe slightly less power, but not enough to really make it a compromise. It seems like the better version of those two vehicles. Am I out of line there?
Well, I'll be honest, I've never given much attention to the Range Rover in general. They're neat, but they've just never really been in my radar. So I haven't really stepped a toe into that arena enough. Okay. I think really to answer your question, I mean, I will say I love the way the Range Rovers look. I love their styling. I love the luxury inside. I love the fact that the reliability means you can probably get one for a tenth of the starting price if you wait 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
that's maybe that's why I haven't paid much attention, because it's like, the only one I can afford is going to be the one that's going to need like $30,000 in repair work.
Okie doke. Well, okay. Let's stop talking about Land Rovers. Let's talk about, I always say, don't start the show with a showstopper, but we're getting towards the middle end-ish of the show, so it's time for the showstopper. And that is the fact that Volkswagen has a new brand, everybody. There's a new Volkswagen brand, and it's Scout. And if you're curious, yes, that's International Harvester Scout, because they're bringing that brand back. And they're bringing it back as an electric SUV and an electric pickup truck in 2026. And we're going to see a like a semi-production version of what, 2024? Am I mistaken there?
Supposedly, here's where we stand. Because I mean, this news is just breaking a few hours ago as we're recording this. And before I jump into that, we are reading some comments later. If you're sticking around, thinking, hey, we're gonna get to some comments later. We have some great comments to catch up on, but we really want to talk about this because international scouts in the United States, off-roaders, are very familiar with the classic international scouts. The thing with this, it's being relaunched, has a brand being called Scout. Volkswagen is behind it, but Volkswagen has said this is going to be its own company. Mm-hmm. It's going to be based in the United States. Mm-hmm. They're going to do the designing, engineering, manufacturing, all in the United States. It's mm-hmm. going to be under the Volkswagen Group umbrella, but it's going to be its own separate entity, meaning that this, in theory, won't be a Volkswagen vehicle with a Scout badge put on it. This is going to be its own effort done here in the United States. The first production vehicle is supposed to be on the road in 2026. So if you do some really basic math, they've got about 4 years to make this happen. It's ambitious, Bruce. I think it's quite ambitious considering that the company hasn't technically been established yet.
That's true.
The news is just coming out today. Volkswagen says the company will be established later this year. The current plan is saying
prototypes of the pickup and the SUV will happen in 2024.
Yep.
That's 2 years from now, less than 2 years, depending on when they mean. Like, that's quick.
Yeah. It's like I said, ambitious, considering the company hasn't been established yet. One thing that Volkswagen did say was the electric Scout vehicles will use a new technical platform concept. That they don't offer any other details beyond that. Yeah, it suggests to me that there's already something in mind, as opposed to just, hey, we're doing this. We're doing this completely from scratch. We're gonna have production vehicles on the road in 4 years. I've been writing
about cars long enough that traditionally what they always say is that it takes 5 years for a car to go from blank sheet of paper to production. Five years is kind of the norm. So if we're talking 4 years for these Scouts, it suggests that maybe for a year they've been working on something that we haven't seen, just kind of getting things ready. And 4 years from now, we'll finally see it.
Yeah, but there's one other small technicality here.
Oh, yes. What is it?
That's 5 years development and prototyping to manufacturing and production with a company that exists.
You're not wrong.
I mean, I'm sure there's more going on behind the scenes. Where is it going to be built? We don't know, other than the United States.
They said the U.S. That's
so. Yeah. I mean, in that time, okay, you have to build a new manufacturing plant, are they going to use Volkswagen facilities?
They have that site in Chattanooga, though. They could build them there, conceivably, right?
But I mean, as I interpret this, though, it's going to be its own separate company doing its own separate thing with its own separate leadership.
I think that might be.
Am I interpreting that a little too extreme, maybe?
Maybe a little bit too much, that it could be its own company. But we have seen what Volkswagen and Audi vehicles come out of the same factories before. Like, that's not out of the realm of possibility. Like, this could be, hey, maybe we're going to invest in a separate line in Chattanooga or something like that, and we are going to build it there. Like, I don't think that an entirely separate manufacturing center necessarily is what this is going to be. It's still going to be its own brand. Like, that's what they're, at least from what they're saying, it's still going to be the Scout brand, just like your Volkswagens, your Audis, your Porsches, your Bentleys, etc. Mm-hmm. Like, it's still going to be its own brand, but maybe they're going to finagle things that it's going to come off of a production line at a factory that already exists. I don't think that they're going to set up everything from scratch. maybe I'm wrong, but that would be just a massive undertaking if that's what they mean that they're going to do.
It certainly would. But I think it's great that they're bringing the Scout brand back.
Totally.
It's focused purely at the United States. Whether or not that evolves later on to include other markets, that remains to be seen. This is news literally just a few hours old as we're reporting. So there's going to be a lot coming in the future on this. It came certainly as a bit of a shock, a bit of a surprise, but for classic off-roaders, for fans of classic off-roaders, you know what the Scout is, built from the early 60s up to about 1980. International Harvester was the company. Of course, International Harvester, they also produced a variety of farm equipment, tractors, engines, your International engines, their semi-truck division. International Harvesters, we know it ended in 1985. The semi-truck division continued on as Navistar International. And I didn't realize this just until today, Bruce, but Volkswagen, through their one of their big truck divisions, actually bought Navistar in 2020. So
same here. I did not know that until today.
It feels like maybe Volkswagen has been thinking about this for a little while.
It's funny that, like, as this news came out, I was like, wait, Volkswagen owns International Harvester? I put that in our Slack chat and I was like, that I didn't know that. That's interesting. And apparently they do. That like you said, that they bought Navistar, which was the remnants of International Harvester, and Volkswagen owns Navistar, and through that deal, they own the Scout brand and theoretically other vehicles that International Harvester made, like the Travelall and stuff like that.
Right. So, I mean, the Scout is going to be the brand here. We don't think there's going to be any mention of International in this.
It's just everything called Scout.
Yep, from everything we've seen thus far from Volkswagen, it's just Scout. And hey, that's fine. Back in the day, you had several variations of Scouts, small SUVs, small pickup trucks. They were a Jeep competitor.
Yep.
And now going into the electric realm, here's a question that I'll ask you, Bruce, and we'll pose this to everybody listening out there. What's going to reach market first? The new Scout electric truck or the Tesla Cybertruck? Ouch. Sorry.
I am not going to be a pessimist.
Sorry. And
I'm going, no, you're not wrong, but I'm not going to be a pessimist. I will give Elon Musk the benefit of the doubt as much as that pains me. And I will say the Cybertruck will happen first.
Yeah.
If it doesn't, I won't be too surprised, because that thing's been delayed and delayed and delayed, but I'll give Elon the benefit of the doubt and say Cybertruck.
And there've been certainly circumstances outside of Tesla's control that have affected not just Tesla, but everybody, just to be fair there. But
yes, but it's still
gotta get a little bit of a dig there. I think the Cybertruck is cool as hell.
Totally. Do we want to hit some letters and then do our kind of interesting
let's do that, because we're going to talk a little bit more about Scout, but
yes,
we need to catch up on some comments from the last couple weeks. We didn't do any last week with our special guest, Mike Schaefer. Which, if you missed that podcast, go the hell back and watch it, because
that was a fantastic show. Josiah, who is a frequent commenter, he actually said it was his favorite show ever, and he was his favorite guest ever. I personally, Myron Vernis is my favorite guest ever, but I can totally understand. Like, Mike, you were fantastic, and you are welcome back anytime.
And I mean, aside from being an insanely talented photographer, anybody who enjoys cars, you take photos of cars, whether it's your own car or you go to a car show. I mean, in addition to just sharing some of his properly crazy adventures in the automotive world,
Hearing about his Evo in Japan, and that he was supposed to fly back every 6 months, and then COVID happened. He's like, well, I guess I got an Evo in Japan now.
I got an Evo in Japan that I can't go and visit. Oh, the pain is real. Yeah. Great podcast to go back and watch. Josiah mentioned, hey, my favorite guest so far up here with Clint and Gabe. Thanks, Josiah, for listening as always. Ted Adam Green.
Back, by the way, I was thinking about that recently.
We definitely do. We need to get a lot of people back.
Yeah,
there's a lot of people that that we need to bring back on, and we're going to do that here as the year goes on. Ted Adam Green says, wonderful ramble, even for someone like me that only had the audio podcast version. Keep up the great work, guys. Yeah, that's definitely one. If you have the chance, go check out the video version, because we share some of his photos on there. Mm-hmm. Or you can go to MotorOne.com and view our podcast post. And we have links to Schaefer's Instagram and all that good stuff. Going back a little bit further, a couple of weeks when we were talking about the Porsche 911 Sport Classic, the Mercedes AMG C43, this is back at the end of April. I just wanted to touch on a couple of the comments here. Ted Adam Green, once again, great ramble. The 911 looks great with the wide body, ventless rear fenders and ducktail spoiler. I totally agree. And I think Porsche I think they hoodwinked everybody on that, because when the prototypes were running around, it's like, I mean, it looks a little bit wider and a little bit meaner, but without those vents, you're not thinking 911 turbo. Mm-hmm. So when they came out and said, yeah, the Sport Classic, it's really the Turbo S. We just had to create new fenders to give it that nice, smooth look. I think that just makes the car sing. Heart of Jar also says that 911 SC is heart emoji, star emoji. Can't disagree with you there. I think it's just a fantastic looking car all around. So thanks for those comments. There's one other that I want to read, and this is something that Josiah sent us through email, and this is back at the end of April. And I really want to thank you, Josiah, for sending this in, because it's a great little conversation piece that we're going to talk about for a little bit. He says, hey guys, I was wondering, since on the podcast you often do cheap car challenges scanning the car market, how can you detect a scam on eBay or Facebook Marketplace? Obviously, there's no real surefire way other than, say, buyer beware. Sure. If you have the opportunity, always go see a car in person. I know there are a lot of people that buy.
Oh, I think you should. I don't know that there's a situation. Maybe I'm an old guy. I'm 36 years old, so maybe I'm the old guy here. I don't trust buying a car purely online. I want to be able to test drive it. I want to be able to see it. I want to be able to open the hood, especially if it's something nearby me. If it's on the other side of the country, maybe I would be willing to take a gamble. But if I'm looking at a car in Facebook Marketplace or Craigslist or something like that, there's no way I'm buying it without at least a test drive first, especially a used car. Just do it.
For cases where it's further away, and I mean, this is just my personal advice. I've owned, I'm holding steady at 34 cars. I haven't bought anything new since I got this Mustang.
It'll happen.
It'll happen sooner or later. But I mean, for the longest time, I would just get a cheap used car, enjoy it for a year or so, have some fun. Sell it, move on. So yeah, I've had 34 cars over the last 20 years or so. The things that I really look for, I look at photos. It's for me, I mean, if I'm looking at, say, a car that's listed for sale here in Rapid City, South Dakota, and it's like, wow, that's a pretty good price, and they have some nice photos, and I see a palm tree in the background, and
yep.
Guess what? There are no palm trees in Rapid City, South Dakota. So, I mean, little things like that can kind of tip me off that, okay, maybe there's something a little sketchy here. If contact information isn't readily available, and I know a lot of people use Gmail accounts, but I'm always a little hesitant if there's just a kind of a generic sounding Gmail email associated with a post. So that's not to say that it's going to be a scam, but that always makes me just a little more wary of where we're going. If there are really sketchy photos, I know some people are just, they're not professional sellers, right? They want to sell the car. But if there are just kind of sketchy photos that show like a corner of the car or a part of the car, or if it's, God forbid, if it's taken at night where you can't really see stuff. I mean, you could always contact the seller. Hey, can you give me some better pictures? I'm always a little wary there. I mean, otherwise, when it comes, especially when it comes to cheap cars, for me, I'm shopping the seller as much as I'm shopping the car. Mm-hmm. I'm contacting them. I'm emailing them. If there's some pretty good email communication, I like to try to talk to them on the telephone, you know, ask them some questions straight up, you know, asking about condition, asking about mileage, all of that good stuff. Through that entire process, generally, I feel like I can get to, you know, I can get to brass tacks whether or not this is a car that I really want to pursue, or if it's a car that's, if not being just a straight out scam, is something that's not necessarily being represented as it should be. And that's kept me pretty safe over the years. I also have just some general guidelines of if there's a fuel leak anywhere, just walk away. Because,
yeah, right you there.
Because, hey, you know what? That's a pretty major thing that can sometimes be construed as pretty minor. If you haven't fixed the fuel leak, why? You know, that's right. Kind of my question. Why? And I say this because I didn't take my own advice. Several years ago, I found a 91 Subaru Legacy Turbo. And I had,
you had that dreams. Car for a little bit, though, didn't you?
I only had it for a few months.
Okay.
I wrote about it in a previous life, actually, with Motor One editor-in-chief Seth Miersma, working with him back then as a Flip This Car series. And I broke my own rule because I went to look at it. Nothing was mentioned about a fuel leak in the ad. I drove a couple hours away. Here sits the car. It's dripping fuel. Oh, yeah, it's just a loose hose. I should have walked away right then. I had visions of being Colin McRae. You know, and I just absolutely love those first gen legacies. So I went ahead and I bought the car, and yeah, it wasn't a leaking fuel line. It was, you know, or leaking hose. It was, the car was just rusted with an inch of its life, and there was really nothing I could do on it. So steps like that. If the seller is cagey on just offering up some information, you know, if you can't answer my questions, you know, it's like, why? Mm-hmm. Right. Don't be afraid to ask questions.
Totally.
The picture thing is kind of like, I mean, that's like the first best way for me to kind of sniff out whether or not it's something I want to pursue. Like I said, selling a car in Rapid City, palm trees in the background. Yeah, that car is not even close. That's some of my advice, at least.
Yep. Josiah, a few of my, and for any of our listeners, a few quick takes. Anytime you see a car listed for $1 on Facebook Marketplace or Craigslist, just ignore it. It's never going to be good. The fact that they put it on for $1 just says that they're trying to get clicks and trying to grab attention. Also, the same thing, the 1, 2, 3, 4, same well, thing.
Now, I've never used Facebook Marketplace, but don't they have a price limit on some of these?
They do, but if you're, I oftentimes look for by year, so like sub 2000 or something like that. Mm-hmm. If I see $1 or 1, 2, 3, 4, I just ignore it. Mm-hmm. It's not realistic. It's people trolling for clicks.
Fair enough.
Okay. The other thing I would say is that looking at the listing is the first step, not the last step. That if you see a listing for a car that you're interested in and you honestly think that you want to buy, you're absolutely right. The pictures, the look at them, like if there are palm trees in the background and you live in an area where there are no palm trees, or if you see snow in the background and you live in an area where it never snows, those are big red flags. So ignore those. But if you see a car that you think you're interested in and things start to look right, then that's the first step. Don't just immediately look at a car and message the guy and say, hey, I'm ready to buy. You got to go look at it up close, because people can hide everything in pictures. People can hide, you know, maybe there's a back corner is crushed in and there just wasn't a picture of that or something like that. What I'm saying is the listing is the first step, that if you like the pictures, then you can go on from there. But don't just take what you see as gospel. That because, you know, you can take pictures, you can manipulate pictures in such a way that, you know, you could kind of not necessarily know what you're getting. So,
And, you know, it always comes down to buyer beware.
Totally.
I mean, there are some very prominent people that have made online purchases and, you know, that have found, okay, oh, this isn't quite how it was represented. Not maybe it's not so much a scam as just, you know, I should have done a little bit more research. But yeah, my two cents, always look at the car in person. If it's across the country and you're really interested, find somebody out there to go look at it in person. That's always going to be the final, you know, sort of the final step. Have some direct eyes on it. Somebody, whether it's yours or somebody you trust.
I agree. Well, Smith, we've got about 15 minutes left of this podcast. Yep. So it's time for our second segment, even though our second segment is going to last 15 minutes. And so for anyone listening, we apologize. This is going to be a largely visual portion of the show. But at the very start, I talked about, hey, we kind of want to watch something with people. And so this is kind of putting our foot in the water with that. And so for anyone who's not familiar, there's a website called archive.org. And archive.org, as far as I can tell, is not indexed by Google. And they have just a treasure trove of everything, whether you're looking for old magazines, old movies, old car brochures, which is what I'm about to show you.
Old brochures and ads maybe for an international scout.
Exactly.
So, and if you can't see this, if you can't go to Motor One Podcast and see this on YouTube, just close your eyes and imagine orange, brown, and sideburns.
You have no idea how right you are.
And you're probably going to get a pretty good taste of this. Yeah. Cause I mean, the Scout was, it was like, I think 1960 or 1961, but you really saw them through the 60s and the 70s. And that's
what we're looking at. Here is the 1976 brochure for the International Scout. And I'm sharing that right now.
And I think it's fantastic. Scout. And to be fair, this isn't just an International Scout thing. If you look at brochures from the 70s, I mean, they're all going to kind of look like this. And it's just,
sure.
It was just some of the beauty of that era, right?
Yep, it totally was. And we're going to try to describe this. I am going to try to describe this in audio as best as I can. So we have 1976 International Scout Terra. Terra was their pickup truck model at the time. And their catch line is Scout the America, others pass by. And so unfortunately, you have this Scout pickup truck in, I don't, is that yellow?
That's going to be like a 70s, like really, really pale kind of cream yellow.
Okay. Yeah. And then brown, and it looks like it's in the wasteland. You can see some Rocky Mountains in the back with some snow capped mountains, but it looks like it's in a swamp because this tree next to it is deader than dead. And
well, that's the area that you would pass by.
Exactly. And it's got a bunch of horses next to it because this is an off-road vehicle. So that is the cover that they give you.
And
so
loving the white wall tires on that too. How often do you see a truck with white wall tires?
Never. And so this is an 8-page brochure. And so Smith and I are going to be the Riff Tracks or Mystery Science Theater 3000 of car brochures right now for these eight pages. Oh boy.
I better take another drink for this one.
Exactly. So page one, 1976 International Scout Terra, the only mid-size pickup on the market, a real pack house for work and pleasure. And it shows one in red again with the brown, almost kind of faux wood-ish siding on it.
Is that brown or is that like a beige or an orange?
It could be burnt orange, maybe.
Maybe a burnt orange with brown. I mean, it is 70s to the core.
Yeah.
With the white wall tires still.
Still, I think it's got the white walls in every picture.
Yeah, I think all of these.
I don't know yet, but
have the thin white walls.
We can see some folks camping.
That image has a guitar. Can you zoom in on the guitar? I've got to take a look.
I only see the guy lighting a cigarette. Where's the guy? Oh, there's the guitar. Okay.
Yeah, the guitar. Yeah. Who places their guitar that close to the campfire? You're just asking to light that thing on fire. Okay, back to your vehicle here.
Lighting. You can see clearly lighting a cigarette in his tent. Like, I'm done with you, Phil. I'm gonna eat a cigarette.
That is straight out of Austin Powers. What was the second one?
Not Spy Who Shagged Me.
Oh yeah, no, yeah.
Spy Who Shagged International Me. Man of Mystery is the first one. Spy Who Shagged Me.
Yep. Spy Who Shagged. That's right out of Austin Powers. The infamous. I'll just say the infamous scene and leave it at that, where the guy is shadowed like perfectly in the tent. You can see his cowboy hat. You can see
only him this smoking. Guy. You can clearly see him lighting up the cigarette. You can see him lighting it. He's just there. He is not. He has no privacy, this poor man.
But boy, that scout is just lit beautifully, isn't it?
Yep, it totally is. Okay. Next page. Here we go. So selective four-wheel drive gets it done when the going gets tough. And so you can see here, again, it's kind of a yellowish cream with a white stripe on this one.
Yeah.
Dashboard mounted four-wheel control makes switching over easy. And this one is kind of in town. You can see guy's got a riding lawnmower in back with just a ton of stuff. Sorry, my eyes water in here. That's why I'm itching it if you're watching on YouTube.
That is like a classic, like, pea green on that truck, it looks like.
Oh, that's totally pea green. Yeah,
that's totally 70s pea green. I bet that's gonna be some like a big canvas bag or something
for the mower clippings that you throw stuff in,
because it's towing a trailer with a gloriously 1970s lawn tractor, white. Yep. with a bright orange body. Can we go back up though for a second?
Sure, we can.
To look at that other yellow. To look at that yellow.
This guy,
that yellow scout. That looks like it has some pretty snazzy wheels on it, doesn't it? That's not the regular just kind of solid chrome hubcap.
Right, those aren't steel.
That's got some wheels, but it still has the white walls. I love it.
And the big white stripe.
The big white stripe on the side.
Yellow dirt bikes.
Little bed rails, little chrome bed rails on the side. That's a sporty looking little truck.
Totally. Let me read this text here. Scout the Americas. Others pass by with selective four-wheel drive on your Terra. Four-wheel drive lets your Terra pack a ton of camping equipment into hunting, fishing country. Drive to a remote beach while surfing with surfing gear, or pull a boat down to the river in the canyon. Scout Terra with four-wheel drive gives you the best of two worlds, work and play.
I mean, it's standard brochure speak.
Oh, totally. It's fun, you know. Like, I love these guys here in the single cab. First off, Volkswagen, if you're listening, you gotta offer these stripes. You have to. This brown truck with white stripes.
And it's not like narrow. I mean, it's a large wide. If you're familiar with like the 80s Ford F-Series, where you would get the two-tone trucks that had, you know, the separate color, like right in the middle of the side, the two-tone right. This stripe is like that. It's a dark brown truck with the white stripe that starts on the hood.
Yeah, you can see it clearly on the hood.
Goes down to the side, and it encompasses most of the side. That would be a great little retro touch. And then you've got these guys just kind of chilling in the bed.
Yeah, I am while the truck is that one of them doesn't have a cigarette in his mouth. I am shocked and amazed.
Hey, you never know. We kind of can't really see it that well. Okay, to be honest.
Yeah. The Terra has a 6-foot bed and a 2,000-pound weight capacity to let you carry a lot of cargo, is what the brochure says.
And you know, I mean, this is a fairly small truck, but most modern full-size trucks these days have a 6.5-foot bed or even slightly smaller bed in favor of having a larger cab. So,
right. This is a single cab truck.
A little single cab truck with a 6-foot bed. Nobody's really making that these days. But then again, this was at a time when trucks weren't the main vehicle of choice for families or for people. They were work. right? They mm-hmm. were workhorses.
Well, I mean, look at these images. You've got guys with some hay bales. You've got a guy who it appears to maybe has a lawn care business or something like that. And then you've got the guy with the dirt bikes off-road. Yep. Like, you can see these were work vehicles.
Different times.
And then we're on page three now, page three of seven. Scout Terra, ruggedness and comfort, takes it tough and easy. And so you get all of the specs of the truck, which we wouldn't actually, I don't see brochures that do this today, but you've got literally, you've got wheelbase, overall length, width tailgate opening, front tread, rear tread, ground clearance, just like everything you could want to know. All the brake
you know,
angle, stuff like that.
Back in my day, before the internet, this is how people had to learn about their vehicles.
Thanks, Smith. But you got this drawing here.
This brings back flashbacks because in a previous life, when I was doing some freelance work, I actually did a lot of work for, I can't remember the name of the website, but it was an F-Series history website.
And, you sent me that one time. Yeah.
And I just pulled so much. I was able to find just about all of these old F-Series brochures. And I mean, it was a time suck because I just enjoyed reading them,
mm-hmm.
you know,
totally.
getting all of this old information. And it's like, I didn't realize that, you know, like the three on the tree, you know, the column shift manual transmission, there were a lot of trucks that still had that well into the 80s.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Okay, let's get into the accessories catalog real quick because they have that here too. So you've got, and Smith, these are the ones you reference. It still has the white wall tires, yep. or the white strip tires, but chrome plated wheels with radial tires, chrome slotted rims with chrome lug nuts, chrome rear axle end plates, and steel belted radial tires. You've got a winch. You've got, what is that? Floor console for bucket seats that you can use to keep food in. You mm-hmm. got the pickup rails that you mentioned just before. You got a snow plow. Power steering, just, you know, all sorts of stuff. And then
look at these interior shots. We're on to interior shots now.
Well,
folks.
Here, I'm going to go down to the interior trim and I'm going to zoom in here. You can get saddle vinyl, tan bark, which is like brown and beige, mm-hmm. I guess. Parchment, Wedgwood blue, which is obviously, and then ivy green. And then on the exterior, you can get white, solar yellow, glacier blue, terracotta, which is kind of a burgundy, mm-hmm. Grenoble green.
That's dark, the pea green.
Yeah, dark. I guess that's meteor brown.
I'm going to guess that's metallic.
Would mean.
I'm going to guess that's a dark metallic brown.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. Fire orange. Buckskin and pewter metallic.
Now let's talk about buckskin for a moment because I mean I hate to be crude, but that's like diarrhea brown.
It kind of is.
That's diarrhea brown. And on the interior colors, we mentioned Wedgwood blue, ivy green, parchment. But understand, folks, this is the 1970s. None of those are solid colors. Those are all like a print. It's got a pattern.
Saddle is the only solid color. All the rest of them are.
Yeah, prints. It's a print where it's varying light to dark in stripes, and it's gloriously 70s. If you're into that.
Oh, totally. Yeah, we're talking about 1976 here. This is mm-hmm. the height of the 70s. It doesn't get more 70s than this. And also that Grenoble green, that pea green for the exterior. I think I'd have to go with that.
Nope.
If I was buying one.
Nope.
No? What are you picking?
You know, I might go with the solar yellow. I'm not usually a yellow person, but the pale yellow.
Well, yeah, we kind of saw it up here, didn't
we? The pale yellow with the white. That dark brown metallic. I hate brown on a vehicle, but to just get the proper feel of this era, if I go with that dark metallic brown, with what color stripe was on that vehicle, like dark metallic brown
white stripe.
That's the kind of white stripe. But I would want like an orange stripe. If you go like dark metallic brown with an orange stripe, that, I mean, brown and orange and yellow, those are like the colors of the 70s.
And then
in my mind,
Oh, totally. And then here at the very end, you can see all of the specs that they offered it in 4x2 and 4x4 configurations. And then they've got some fantastic photos with it hauling a tiny horse trailer in a pickup version with the I assume the Rockies. Those look like the Rockies to me in the background.
It's Photoshopped.
Yeah. In 1976, it was Photoshopped.
It's Photoshopped.
I love this shot, which appears to be at like a frat house or something like that.
It looks like a frat house.
Right. Who's just like, hey, baby. And she does not look comfortable. And then you've got all of the guys on the left hand side in the bed who are loading it up to go.
Look at that plaid sofa or plaid easy chair in the bed of that truck.
Why is there a baby bassinet carrier thing? What is that going on? It does not fit with the rest of this photo, but they got themselves a big, like a milk jug and like something that looks like that you would use to put moonshine in.
That's going to be that's the yellow truck with the brown stripe on the side.
Totally.
With what I call the moon hubcaps and the white wall tires. Everything has white walls here.
Everything's got white walls. And then here's the last bit. Here are the 1976 International Family of Scouts. You got the Scout 2, and this one is in red with a white stripe that goes over the hood. Mm-hmm. You got the Scout Traveler.
That's an SUV, to be clear. That's an SUV two-door. And then the Scout Traveler.
You got Scout Traveler, which has a white top and white stripes along the side. And I'm fairly certain on the Traveler that roof was removable. Mm-hmm. Don't quote me on that, but I'm 90% sure of that. And then you got the Scout Terra, which is the one that we were looking at, which is the pickup truck. Mm-hmm. And that is like that's pea green. That's either the pea green or that yellow color you like with brown stripes along the side.
Yeah, it's a photograph from the 70s. All the colors kind of blend a little bit over time, but Volkswagen, if you're listening, here's a little taste of what you could do if you wanted to go a little retro.
Volkswagen, you got to offer these stripes. I'm scrolling up now. You have to offer brown with white stripes.
And
like, that looks so good.
I hate to say it kind of does, or no, actually, it doesn't. It doesn't look good, but I still love it for the context that it's in. It's one of the color schemes I would go for. If those were orange stripes with the brown, woo.
Okay.
It's not pretty, but it's 70s, and I'd have it.
And Smith. So super quick here, we're going to do a 3-minute version of this because we're at an hour and 17 minutes. I found this also on archive.org. They have the British brochure for the Nissan 300ZX, the Z31.
Oh,
you
can
get the turbo.
I hate you right now.
I love the fact that it still has the dealer, Dan Perkins UK Limited in Watford.
Yep,
I hope you're still in business. But we're going to do the super
look
quick.
Look at that.
It is for the 300ZX and the Turbo ZX. They call them supercars, it might be a bit of a stretch.
I mean, those were still, those were still 200 horsepower, I think, in that trim.
Yeah. And this is the turbo.
In the early mid-80s, that wasn't
bad. The lower fascia with the turbo on it. It's got the scoop the turbo.
It's got the T-tops.
It's got the T-tops.
You are killing me, Bruce.
Yeah,
I've got to move in a few months. I can't be looking at more Z31s. I can't.
And here's the T-tops off, and they're just showing you all the bells and whistles. Like, you've got the cool stereo for the time.
That 80s dash with more buttons than a fighter jet.
You got the pop-up headlights, and like I said, the T-tops. Here's page 10. So we'll do two more pages here. They just like basically showed it off in every way they could. Here it's loading here. So you can see it on the track, going through the slalom, going through the snow, in the wind tunnel, in production, just a body in white. And then they show the different versions. And then last page here is back to the car here in the rear. So I wanted to share that with you real quick.
What a great looking car. And I'm happy and sad to see values going up on those. Mm-hmm. it means that people are starting to appreciate and remember just how cool those cars were. It also means it's just going to be harder for me to get one later on, but
yeah,
it will happen eventually. What a show, man.
Yeah, man, this was fun.
What a show. What a walk down memory lane. I'm super stoked to hear that Scout's coming back.
Same. I had no idea Volkswagen owned that name, and hearing that they're like, yeah, we are going to make a US focused brand called Scout. That's a cool idea. Like none of us know about the vehicle yet, but it's a cool idea.
It's smart. And how long have we been saying? And when I say we, I mean like the automotive community in general. Why isn't Volkswagen trying to step a foot into the pickup truck market in the United States when they have something available? Well, maybe this is the reason. And by launching it with a name that's familiar in the United States.
I'm excited. I don't know if it's familiar because like it takes guys in their 30s and their 40s to know what that is, but at least it has a legacy. It has something they can build on. They can show, brochures like we just showed with people taking them off road and hauling dirt bikes and hauling stuff with like, it's a name with a history and with a legacy that they can build on for the new version.
I can feel my sideburns growing right now.
Yeah.
After looking at those brochures, it's just coming out. I've got some ABBA I'm going to go listen to here in a bit.
That sounds good, man.
Awesome.
All right, man. So real quick. So as I said earlier, I got our weeks confused. We should, assuming he's in good health, which he wasn't in last time because of a story I want him to tell because it's fantastic. But we should have Larry Casilla from Ammo NYC with us next week as a guest. And then we also have a guest scheduled for the week following that. So
I should jump in and say, if you have any thoughts on the International Scout, thoughts on anything that we've talked about, email us podcast at motorone.com. Go to Motor One Podcast on YouTube, comment there. Go to motorone.com on Fridays when the article goes up. You can comment there. And if you have any questions about detailing for our guest next week, go ahead and send those our way too, because this particular person has some serious experience. And we're talking about some experience with some very, very cool cars. So it's going to be a great episode. Email us, comment, we read them, we listen, we try to comment and respond when we can. Yeah. Next week's going to be cool.
Yep. So everyone, thank you. Good afternoon, good evening, or good night. We appreciate all of our listeners. We appreciate all of our comments. I got a little bit backed up. It's been a little bit busy this week. So there are some comments on our YouTube page that I haven't responded to yet. But if you're listening, I will get back to you. But otherwise, we appreciate it. And so bye-bye, everybody.
We'll see you next week.